ball spark.
You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Aaron Kalk, Jared Atha, hanging out before we head up to state tournament basketball this afternoon. We got Leland Searcy coming on at 9:30. He's retiring as an official from basketball. I think he's still going to do a couple years of football. I relive some memories with him, that classic story of the 5A football title game a few years back when they chartered a plane and all that. We'll let him tell you that, as well as the Officials versus Cancer that he's been involved in as well. But first, joining us this morning is the voice you'll hear at 11 o'clock in the morning. Maybe not this week, depending on what his obligations are at the Big House, but it's Mr. Mark Rogers. Mark, how are you?
Skinny, I got to know if you try to ding-dong.
I've actually had a couple of different listeners since that's happened say, you know what? You were right. Ding-dong's overrated. They're just not as good as we thought they'd be.
Well, listen, you can like a ding-dong and still not try to diminish all of the great work by Little Debbie. So I don't know where Jim was coming from on that, but it was that was some entertaining radio for all.
Boy, did our phones blow up that afternoon.
You know, I listen on our stream just to make sure that the breaks go like they're supposed to go and nothing gets out of whack. And so I'm like 30 seconds maybe delayed sometimes, and my phone was blowing up before I ever even heard what he said. Lane Jones is one of the very first ones that texts, and I was like, what does Lane want? And I looked up, and I was like, oh, my. And about that time, I heard what he said, and like I told you, I had to plug my phone in because it was going to die the way it was buzzing around that day. But it's pretty good stuff, no doubt about it.
That was funny.
What are your obligations this weekend up at the Class A and B state tournament? You got any of that stuff going on?
I do. I've got a bunch of – I've got tonight and next Thursday I'm busy, but the rest of the time I'll be up there. I'll be there tomorrow for the evening session and then Saturday for the finals. And then next week I don't even know, but my schedule's all blocked out other than radio. It'll be one of the busier weeks of the year.
We've had a couple of the different coaches on from around here with a couple of hot topics, it feels like, have sprung up here at the end of the basketball season. I want to get what your thoughts. Clock is number one. Cameron Jordan's written a bunch of different articles there, talking to coaches, talking to administrators or whatever, about the possibility of a shot clock coming to high school basketball. Out here, it's a totally different feel than what you read in the paper, because to a man and woman, everyone out here says absolutely not. But it does feel like it's almost a little bit inevitable at some point. What do you think? Where do you think this is headed with the shot clock in high school basketball in Oklahoma?
Well, I'm curious as to why it seems like out there it's not as popular. I think sometimes people hear the shot clock and then there's like 9 ideas that come up in their mind about why it wouldn't work, when really I don't think there's that many ideas. There's not many things prohibiting it from happening. I don't know. Maybe if you grew up and if you're kind of used to the, I don't know. It's a good question. I think sometimes when you're playing A and B, it's a little smaller, a little slower pace than it is maybe in higher classes. But what is the resistance to it that you guys hear?
Cost number one.
Personnel to run it.
Yep, and then the personnel, and also we've had a few of the coaches say, how much more are we going to put on the officials when there's such a shortage of them anyway? You know, it's just another thing that they could get wrong and take a bunch of flack about where it's not in the game right now. But cost is number one by far of not only putting the equipment in, but also getting somebody to run in it and training somebody how to do it, because you're going to have an extra person that can't run both clocks.
I think there's some implements or things that you can put in on even a scoreboard, most of them, that really kind of run itself, or program it in a certain way. I work with those guys at Squirtle and some of the great things that they do, and how could that ever work? You know what I'm saying? I mean, that they and a lot of the schools in Northwest Oklahoma have that, and you know what I'm saying? They find ways to do that, where you've got a broadcaster and you've got a camera and you've got streaming and all those kind of things that I would think is way more difficult to run than just a simple shot clock. So I think if there's a will, there's a way. I do think it might be better for the game. But if it's better for the game, I think they could find a way to make that happen.
Okay, so I've been on the fence about this one way or the other. I like the idea of a shot clock to modernize the game. If it improves the game, I'm all about it. But I don't like to modernize it just for the sake of modernizing it. But I've been trying to equate this to history. So 6 versus 6, was there – and help me if you remember. I'm not trying to date you how old you are.
Oh, I remember.
But was there pushback back then when it was going from 6-on-6 to 5-on-5 in the girls' game? I mean, now it's an afterthought and it's the past and everyone's okay with what we got. But – that's what I'm trying to equate this to. Was there a pushback then, like there is kind of now with the shot clock?
No, I mean, we played 6-on-6 until at Blackwell, and we were 4A school, played 6-on-6 until they had to go to 5-on-5. And I think it's, again, sometimes it's like, well, hey, it's just the way we did it, and this is the way it's been done, and so we're not changing. And I think a lot of times that's just the wrong way to look at it. I'm glad, I don't want to guard, I'll tell you this. I mean, can't imagine playing basketball, never getting to shoot. I mean, all those girls out of, feel like they kind of got cheated a little bit at the game. So, like, listen, I think 6-on-6 is, I mean, my goodness, if I could tell my 18-year-old self about 6-on-6, I'd say it's the worst idea ever, you know. So I think that sometimes it is better just to take a kind of a critical look at it and go, we need to change. I do think that, most of the times where I see teams kind of like to try to take the air out of the ball, it doesn't work. If I'm a coach of a more talented team, then I want more possessions. That's the way you win games. If I'm a coach of a team that's not as talented, likely you're not going to be able to dribble out the clock and pass the ball to beat a team that's better than you. So it kind of takes care of itself, but I just kind of think it cheats the game a little bit to try to play a 15-minute basketball game.
Yeah, and there's nothing worse than and we see it every now and again up there over this weekend, that it's a great game. I'll never forget the Fort Cobb Surreal game a couple of years ago. I think it was Kellen's senior year. It was up and down, fast and furious, and all of a sudden they take the air out of the ball at the end of the third quarter for 2 minutes, and Scott just stands there and watches it happen, and you're just thinking, why? Why is this?
We had a fun game.
It's been a great game until right now. And then, of course, all the fans got on Coach McLemore. They end up winning, so it didn't matter in the end.
Think about it this way. I mean, aren't you glad that – I mean, Dean Smith used to do that all the
time.
Aren't you glad we don't have that college basketball?
Yes, 100%.
There's some college basketball games I'd like to see about 10 minutes of, and then it'd be over.
Yeah, the Bedlam game, and maybe last night, Iowa State fans were ready to go about 5 minutes in.
Oh, my God.
That'd be 36 in a college game. It's hard to – it's just hard to imagine. There were
close to 50 turnovers in that game last night. That was bad.
It's hard to watch. The official shortage. We are already worried about football next year. We've been trying to kind of talk through it out here with yelling at the refs and how, if I was a 25-year-old guy or 30-year-old guy wanting to stay in sports, officiating is a great way to do it, but not at the cost of that. So how does this all work together to try to replenish some of the officials and the stockpile of officials all across the state of Oklahoma?
I don't know. I think they are being paid a little bit more. I think that helps some. Just a good question. I think sometimes the rules can be a little intimidating. How much do I have to know? Do I have to, what are the nuances of all of that? And then definitely it can be that way when you get in front of a hostile crowd and you don't have a whole lot of experience doing it. So I don't know. We could do this. We could have mind control, and I don't think we're going to be able to get crowds to treat the officials a whole lot better. I just don't think that's going to happen. So
yeah,
it's a tough question. I don't have an answer for it.
I've seen the sweetest of moms yell the meanest of things to officials at ball games, and then as soon as the game's over, they're back to being that sweet mom. It's crazy how a game can just grab somebody like that and just yell whatever they want at officials. There's been plenty, and I'm guilty. And we were saying that too earlier. Me and Aaron, we're all guilty of it, and we just got to be more conscious of it. I can't tell you how many times my wife has nudged me in the ribs for stuff I'm yelling. She's looking at me like, "Will you shut your mouth?" But
yeah, I just think you have to you just have to say it's not happening. I mean, I went back and lived in Blackwell for a year. I kind of helped by organizing umpires for Little League. I was bored as could be. There wasn't a whole lot to do, and people that I went to, grew up, went to church with, yelling at me, and it really was a big eye-opener for the rest of my life, is that, look, I know baseball. I know the rules of baseball. I mean, it's basically, you don't know the rules of baseball. I mean, so why I don't understand why people get so all up in arms over things like that, but you just, you know, it kind of taught me, hey, look, you don't ever want to be like that. So I think you have to look at it from that perspective, is put yourself in those shoes, is like, really? I mean, you know, they're out there doing their best for not very much money. And, again, calls are going to go your way sometimes. And you're never, if you're that passionate and biased, which we all are when we're rooting for our team or our kids, you're never going to be able to look at it like, yeah, well, we got the breaks tonight. We won't get them the next time or whatever. But it just doesn't happen like that.
What are you looking forward to this weekend as far as the Class A and B state tournaments? Is there a certain bracket that you're ready to watch outside or more than others? Or, you know, for me, I think that the Class A boys is up in the air. It could be anybody of the eight that made it to state.
Yeah, I think that should be fun to watch. I think that Hydro will be tough to beat in there. I know that they won last year. I think that they've got a good squad. Class B boys, I think, will be fun to watch. I think that first-round matchup is really good between Mountain View and Fort Cobb. I know Roth is the number one seed, and they got beat going into they got beat in the area. So I think Glencoe's pretty good in that Class B boys bracket. I think Class A girls will be really, really tough to knock off Hydro. Just the Berkey twins are just such good players that it'll be tough to beat them in that class.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, everything you said right there. I think, and I'm agreeing with Aaron too, Class A boys seems wide open. We're more in tune with the Hydros because we've seen them out here in Western Oklahoma.
Sure.
Seen some flaws and stuff. But as far as teams, help us out, you know, with teams like Vanos and Riverfield, you know, we're not familiar with them out here in Western Oklahoma. What can you tell us about them?
Well, I really don't know as much about Riverfield. You know, they weren't that highly rated, but they did come through and beat some good teams. I wouldn't favor them over Garber. And I think some of the, you know, in Tulsa especially, if you get into that league where, you know, you're Regent Prep and you're playing Victory Christian and all that stuff, a lot of times you get underseeded by the coaches because your record isn't very good. And I don't think that they do a whole lot of deep dive about, well, you know, with this record, a team like that's not going to be as good as somebody else that doesn't have the same kind of competition. So Vanos, you know, pretty good. A lot of history in that program. They're used to being good, and have dropped down a little bit. Most of the time that they kind of hover around the 2A level, and so that, you know, that region was one that had some upsets. Wellston was really kind of came from nowhere to get into the winners bracket finals, and then Riverfield was able to eliminate them to get to state. So I think that I do like Garber to get through on that side of the bracket. And then, so you guys think that we might have someone in the finals other than Hydro, Canute, or Arapahoe Butler?
Well, don't put words in our mouth. I don't
know.
So.
I don't.
I know Aaron loves Hydro, and I've seen them. You know, they're beatable, but they're good, and they returned a lot of teams from that state championship team last year. I can definitely see them playing on Saturday. I think a potential semifinal matchup between Hydro and Arapahoe could be fun.
That'd be really good. I didn't mean to gloss over Class B girls. I picked them on Channel 5 last night. I picked Pittsburgh, I haven't seen Pittsburgh, but they're undefeated. They face a pretty difficult schedule. And Lomega had some losses down the stretch, and there's probably some reasons why for that. But I think that, you know, they've got such rich tradition, and it would be interesting to see if an outsider can kind of break through in that bracket.
That's a wild card pick. Now, we're going to make our picks later.
That was
in the show,
that was going to be my question about Class B girls, because it's been Hammond and Lomega all year long. And we've seen Hammond, and they're fantastic with 6'4" freshmen down low with Henley West and then all the guards around them. But that was my question. Who else is out there? Pittsburgh would be your pick outside of those top two that have been there all year.
Yes, I would think so. Yes. Now, if it is Lomega and Hammond in the finals, that'll be pretty good.
Now, we have a lot of Mountain View listeners. They've kind of come out of nowhere. They're still undefeated, ranked second from start to now. Any love for them? Think they got a good shot?
No, I'm picking them to win.
There you go.
Yeah, I think so. That class has been pretty talented. They've been good in all sports, and so I think that they, Glencoe on the other side of the bracket will be good. Roth plays a different style. It's a lot of slowing it down and being, really tough defense, get after you all over the floor. But I think Mountain View is going to be good enough to overcome that. They got to get past my boy Scott Hines mm-hmm. in the first round. It's not going to be easy, and so that's kind of a tough opening draw. I don't think Fort Cobb is quite as good as it's been in the past, but they still have a great tradition, which is incredibly hard to overcome, and they've got really, really good coaching.
I saw Fort Cobb firsthand in our gym, and they are good.
The
when
difference,
they can shoot, they're unbeatable, but that's the question, if they can show up and shoot.
The difference in tradition, I was kind of doing some legwork on those games last night. Last year was the first year Mountain View Godibo had ever made the state tournament. And last year was one of the, and Scott's missed it about three times in this century there at Fort Cobb. So that's a lot of times to me, man, that the experience that those guys have, it's invaluable because there's nothing that you can throw at Coach Hines or the Mustangs that they haven't seen outside of maybe 6'9" Skylar Timberland underneath.
Well, then just the confidence of being there, the confidence of having gone through all that stuff, I think is what's the – That's what sets it apart for me is that, hey, look, this isn't that big a deal. We've been to the state tournament before, whereas I think Mountain View benefits for sure from being there last year.
Right.
That they, hey, look, we did it last year. We're over that hump. So now we can go play.
One last question to me, and you mentioned the rankings. That's been a hot topic out here. I don't see a better way to do it. Because no one but the coaches sees as many teams as they see, but how do you kind of start holding them accountable, or is there a way? Is this just the way it's going to be? Because it's so important in basketball, because that's how the brackets are made with the rankings that are set in there.
Yeah, there's a way to do it. I mean, everybody's got to participate.
Right.
One, I really try diligently to track scores during the season. So I'll go on the and I'll find scores that aren't posted anywhere. You know what I'm saying? And we'll be able to get a newspaper from some place. So the coach has to do it. I understand coaches have a lot of responsibility, but one of the responsibilities should be posting your scores. And I do think that if there are scores that haven't been posted from the season, then I think you send them a note and say, look, you guys aren't going to be able to play in the district tournament until these scores are posted. And it has to be just something like that done before that, where there's some teeth in it, because people just don't do it. It's not hard to do. If there's a problem, it should be easy to troubleshoot it on the OSSA, rankings website. So post the scores. I think that helps. And I think you just got to look at it a little deeper. It's like, hey, look, who's good in the other classes? It's pretty easy to understand. For example, it's always – clearly, Oklahoma City Public Schools, I thought in the district or the regional you guys were in, mm-hmm. at Elk, Bethany and John Marshall in the first round, I mean, really? And I get that they've got to do boys and girls. That was tough. I thought Douglas in that regional.
Yeah, Douglas and Clinton was a crazy district.
Yeah.
I saw Clinton play at the Cashin Tournament. That's a good team.
Yeah.
And so now you got Douglas and Clinton in the regional tournament? I mean, in the district tournament? That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So Douglas was way underseeded, and I can just be honest with you, Douglas didn't post a whole lot of scores this season. And they finally, I think, got most of those in there, but you got to post those results. And Douglas played an unbelievably tough schedule, man. They played Northwest. They played John Marshall. I think they had their game with Millwood postponed, but they played in a couple of tough tournaments. And so it's okay, you lose, it's okay, but you have to take into consideration who those guys are playing.
Well, we're out of time. We'd love to have you back and talk about public versus private. We'll have a full hour for you on that discussion. But I have one final question.
We'll do it next week. I don't know what you guys got going on, but I'm good.
Okay.
Final question. I know people like to stump you with this. What is Riverfield's mascot?
Oh, my God. I don't know. I really don't. They play – they're not a football team. I can tell you that they're blue and green. So I'll go with the Frogs. I know that's wrong.
Ravens. I had to look it up. I didn't know
all
that.
All the alliteration. There you go. Okay.
The Ravens.
You got me, man. I'm going to take some laps.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard that not work out in your favor, Mark. But
I know, man.
You have the crutch.
They're in the state tournament.
You had the crutch of not being a football school, so we can understand not ever being a part of the magazine. Hey, man, we appreciate your time. We'll see you up there this weekend.
All right. See you guys.
That is Mark Rogers joining us here on a state tournament Tuesday or Thursday morning. By the way, update from the Big House. Navajos come back. They were down as many as 12.
They Coach do El- that.
Coach Ellison's crew back within six. 22-16 in the second quarter playing Caddo. The opening tip of the Class A Girls State Tournament happened at 9 o'clock this morning. All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, the guests will keep rolling in.
Awesome.
Our man Leland Searcy, long-time official. It'll be his last go-around at the state tournament this weekend.
We'll see him there, too.
We'll see him. And we'll pick his brain about the memories and the officials versus cancer. And I'm telling you, if you haven't heard the story of the 5A state championship football game, I think it was 2017 or 18, you got to hear it next. Nearing the halftime mark of that Class A girls quarterfinal inside the Big House right now, Caddo 24, Navajo 21. So the Lady Indians have come back. Coach Ellison brought them back down. I think they were 12 at one time, down three now as they near halftime. Joining us now.
They're not scared of that. They're not scared of that. They were down to Calumet 18 at half back in the area.
That's right.
And came back. They've been in this situation before, so this is nothing new to them.
Joining us now is a longtime official here in the state of Oklahoma. It's going to be his last go-around on the basketball floor anyway this weekend inside the Big House. Leland Searcy, how are you, sir?
Very good, Aaron. Thanks for having me. And this year went pretty fast.
Yeah. So take us back. When did you decide that this was going to be the final one for your basketball officiating career?
Well, so for basketball, this summer I kind of sat back and I talked to my wife about it, and we discussed it. And, you know, from November to November to March, my schedule is, you know, it's plumb full. So, and I got to thinking, you know, my body is not resisting refereeing basketball right now, but my body is slow to recuperate. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, we kicked it around for a couple weeks, and I just told her one night, was out eating dinner one night, and I said, you know what, I think this is it for me. I think this is my last go around in basketball, and I'm gonna go out and have a good season this year, and we're gonna call it good. 41 years is enough. So that's kind of what I decided, and that was around the 1st of August when I come up with that. So.
Well, Leland, most of the time when we see you, you're wearing the black and white stripes and officiating. Now that you're going to retire, at least from basketball, we'll talk about football coming up. So are we going to see in maybe Canute colors more?
Well, you know, there's a darn good chance of that. You know, I got a daughter down there that's assistant coach. And, yeah, we're gonna go watch our grandkids play. We're going to go watch, you know, I got 13 grandkids then. So, and they're all they're between ages 20 and 2 for the most part. So, looking forward to going down to Canute, and looking forward to seeing my grandson at Shattuck play. And then I got some grandkids at Bixby also. So, anyway, yeah, that's definitely going to be in Canute a little bit.
We'll see in all kinds of colors. Well, that's great. That's yeah. Awesome that you'll have that time to go see your grandkids. That's great.
How yeah. has it changed over 41 years, not only just your job, but then everything that's around it? We've been talking for the last couple of weeks now with the different things that have happened throughout the playoffs, the big fight down in Calvin. There's just, you know, it seems like it's a nightly occurrence during the playoffs that fans are getting escorted out. How has that changed in your 41 years, just the way that you are treated on the floor during games?
Well, it's changed a lot. I'm not gonna sit here and try to smokescreen the fact that the fans are pretty rowdy. But whenever I started officiating in 1978, I was a junior at Panhandle State University. And I started working some junior high games there at Goodwill, and my high school coach said, you need to be in this officiating class. And so I went and enrolled in an officiating class in January, and I started refereeing. But pretty much the first time I realized it was, you know, it got late in the season, about year five. And I realized, and I'd heard other officials talk about it. Other, you know, I looked up to all my peers, And I'd rather heard him talk about it and this and that, but I thought, it's surely not that bad. And so back then, people would yell at you. And if they wanted your attention during a dead ball, you'd turn around, and they'd be yelling at you. But as soon as you turned around, they'd duck behind somebody.
Yeah.
They didn't want you to know who they was.
Uh-huh.
But I promise you today, that's changed. They don't care who you are. And they're on the front row sometimes. So that's been a big change. And I'm gonna retire day after tomorrow. And I've got two games today at a 4A regional in Enid, and I've got the Saturday game. I got the A girls. But I'm proud to say that I've removed two fans in 41 years, and I've been able to deal with it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Has it gotten bad? And I'm telling you, the first 15 years was pretty bad. You know, they yell, but I'm going to say the last 15 of my career, I haven't heard a lot. I mean, sometimes we tune them out, and probably my wife was there. She'd say, you didn't hear that. So, you have to tune the crowd out as an official. You cannot let them get to you in a mental way, because if you do, It'll change your way you're refereeing, and that's not what we want. The kids need us on the court to be drawing the line right down the middle, and so I've been able to do that. And and once you get older, guys, your hearing is not as good. You blow that whistle for 40 years, you don't hear everything. So that's a good thing sometimes. So.
Well, we work in radio. We wear headsets every day, so our hearing will go quicker than others. My favorite part of that story was your early days of officiating. You said your high school coach told you to go take a class. Were you offended by that, or did you credit him for the path he set you on?
Okay, so I'm going to set the record real straight. I was not a great athlete in high school. I was a good baseball player, okay? I played basketball. My high school coach and our backyards intersected each other, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our backyards intersected, and he kind of took me under his wing. He taught me how to play golf at 14 years old, and I was athletically an average athlete in high school. So, no, I didn't take that personal. He just saw that I knew the game going through high school, and it was, like I said, it was my third year in college. He knew I knew the game. And he said, you need to give this a try. And he said, Coach Smith's got an officiating class, and you need to be in there this next semester. So that's how I got in there. No, I didn't. I wasn't offended by it at all. I just was, he knew I had something to give back to the game, and I appreciate him to this day. I appreciate him, and he's still he lives in Stillwater. He's Coach Sinclair, Don Sinclair. He's a Southwest Oklahoma guy. So down Gray Doyle or, down in that part of the world, lived at Lindsay. But, yeah, it didn't offend me whatsoever. So I've been forever grateful.
How much have you enjoyed or maybe not enjoyed as it's gone more to a three official crew, especially in the playoffs, versus the standard two that has happened for a lot of your career?
Well, I can tell you that it extended my career for sure. And to be quite frank, when we were doing two person, that was part of the reason we got yelled at a lot, because
yeah.
We did not get everything. I'll be the first to tell you that in two person, the middle of the floor does not get covered the way it should. And so with that third person, what we call the position, the C position, the middle of the court gets covered, because that's his responsibility. So I've been an advocate of it. I've learned it from college officials at our camps in the summer. We have a big camp at OU. Lon Kruger put it on, and now this is the first year back for the OU camp with the new coaching staff. And I have been a student of the game the last 6 or 8 years, and I've listened to those guys that have helped us in those camps, and it has helped my officiating. I'm not gonna lie, I would have been out of here 3 or 4 years ago had it not been for three persons. So I loved it. I think it's better for the game. It's better for the kids. And I had a quick story. When I first started doing it, I hire officials for a few tournaments. And Eddie Thomas is superintendent at Laverne. And I said, Mr. Thomas, we want to use three person. And he said, you think it's better? And I said, well, I think it is. I really do. I'm a proponent of it. So he said, let's do this. I'll do three person. I'll pay you for three person for the last four games on Friday, which is all the winners games, mm-hmm. and the last four on Saturday. And we'll talk Saturday night. So when I done the schedule for the tournament, I pulled myself out of the championship game on Saturday night of the boys because mm-hmm. I wanted to sit by him and listen to him. And he said, Leland, our tournament, the last 5 years, I went back and looked, our tournament, we averaged three and a half, four technicals to the coaches. And this year, I've not heard one coach yell. And I said, that's because there's always somebody in his box, and he doesn't have to scream across the floor, hey, watch this, or hey, watch that. There's a guy right beside him. And when this is the deal, I've lived it. If the coach gets excited and he starts flailing his hands, guess what? Those 60 or 80 people right behind him is going to do the same thing.
Yep.
So it's been good. It's been good for the game, and it's been great. I really appreciate the OSSAA endorsing this three-person, and we did it in regionals this year for the first time. And it looks like we're there, and we used about everybody in the state to referee, but we did get to use three-person, so it's been good.
Take us back. Was it 2018? When the football, when you guys were on the 5A football final, was it 2018 or 2017?
It's 2019.
2019. Fall of 2019. All right. For the people that don't know this story, you guys, as that crew, were going to get to call the 5A state title game. That's right, because it was at Edmond that first year that they had everything at Wantland. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I was in Cleveland unaware of exactly what was happening until the story came out in the paper a couple of days later. So tell everybody exactly how that went down and why I had a tie to it there in Cleveland, Oklahoma on that Saturday afternoon.
So I'm sitting in my office at my house, and I've got that Oklahoman, and it's sitting right here on my desk. Flight Plans was the name of the article, right?
Yes.
So Corey Miller was the basketball coach at Chisholm at the time, and he was at Woodward, as you know, a few years back, and that's where he started refereeing on my football crew and does an outstanding job on the sideline. He's very good at what he does. So, anyway, we get the championship game. Now, let's back up before we go there. He started refereeing with me in 2005. So we get a championship game in 7, and he had basketball games. He couldn't help us. So we had to implement another guy to fill his spot. We got another championship game in 11. Another one in 15. He has yet to be on the field with us in a state championship game. And I told him, I said, listen, man, before we get done officiating football, we've got to figure out a way to get you here. Well, and we have no control over what game we get.
Right.
Well, we get this game, and it's like a 4 p.m. kick. And he's in the Cleveland basketball tournament, and we're talking about this. And, okay, my crew, we get together on Wednesday. We said, how can we do this? And I said, there's a guy up north of Moreland here that has an airplane. Let's call him. Let's have him fly to Cleveland. As soon as Corey gets done with his game at Cleveland, he'll fly him to Oklahoma City. We'll pick him up at the airport, and he'll be at the field at 2:30 or 2:45 for our 4 o'clock kickoff. Well, man, we pulled it off, and it was amazing to have him on the field with us because, when you've got your five guys there, You know, for that game, especially that was Bishop McGinnis and Carl Albert, and it was a great football game. So, yeah, it was a memorable. You know, those are the things we don't want to ever forget about. You know, with officiating is the things we do to make it happen. So.
If memory serves, did that game go into, because they played Elk City? Did that game go into overtime, or maybe a shot to take it to overtime didn't go in? Do you remember that?
Okay. So the football game was. The final score was 30-15. That was a little bit more. The final score wasn't indicative of how the game went.
Right.
It was 15-15 in the fourth quarter, and McGinnis is it's 10 minutes to go, and McGinnis is lined up for a field goal, and that kid is kicking now at OU. He took Berkish's job after Berkish left. He's at OU kicking. He's a great kicker. Kicked all the kickoffs in the end zone, deep in the end zone, and he's got a great leg. So anyway. He's lined up to kick about a 39 or 40 yard field goal, and a Carl Albert kid comes from off the edge. I've never seen this, and I've got this on video. He jumps to block the field goal. He catches the ball in his hands lands on his feet, and goes 75 yards for a touchdown.
Oh, my gosh.
It was the most incredible play that I've witnessed in my 30 years of football officiating. But that momentum of that play for Carl Albert made them – it got them up – 20. They went for two and got up by eight. And then McGinnis threw a pick there late and then went and scored late and made it 30-15. But it was an incredible ball game.
I was talking about Corey's basketball game at the Cleveland tournament.
Oh, well, that's a better story. Yeah, I think I saw Bobby Boucher do that.
I think it either went to overtime or maybe they had a shot to take it to overtime that was delaying everything.
Sorry, Skinny, I missed that.
No worries.
So I've got the airplane. We've got the airplane sitting at the Cleveland airport waiting for him. And he says, you know, I think we can beat this team. So he said, as soon as we get done, I'll be at the airport, yada, yada. So everything's ready to go. I said, well, text me when you walk out of the gym. And so he's playing that 12-15 game. And at 1:30, I'm thinking, okay, he's fixing to be texting me.
Mm-hmm.
1:40, still no text. 1:45, no text. He wins the game by 1 point in overtime, and he literally goes in there and hugs all these kids and tells them good job, and he says, I got to go. And he jumps in the car and runs to the airport and jumps in the airplane and heads to Edmond. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts. All right, fill us in. Officials versus Cancer, something you've been involved in, spearheading that effort. Tell us about that before you go.
Okay. Man, I haven't talked to you in a while, so I've got some really cool news on this. Last, and Mark Rogers, you know, that's funny that you had him on. Last summer, before our meetings at Shawnee, officials meetings, the state meetings are at Shawnee last summer, a couple, 3 weeks before that, we're trying to get some airtime to promote our golf tournament, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our golf tournament was like July the 9th, and that meeting was the end of July. So I'm on the air with Jim Traber, and I'm on the air with Mark Rogers one day. And so I called Jim, and so backing up just a little bit, Lon Kruger used to be our spokesperson, right? Mm-hmm. He retires. We pick up Jim Traber. Jim Traber is our spokesperson. He builds us a video, and it's a great video. I'll send it to you. It's a great video. And so anyway, we're on the radio promoting our golf tournament, trying to get people to come play golf and support this pediatric cancer fundraiser. And Mr. Lane, Jeremiah Lane at the Children's Hospital, calls me about 4 days later after I'm on the radio. I'm on with Jim, Mark in the morning about 11:30 and Jim at 1:30. So about 3 days after that, Jeremiah Lane calls me on the radio or on the phone. He says, hey, you were on the radio the other day talking about your officials versus cancer? And I said, yeah. He goes, well, I had a guy come in my office, or had a guy call me. He set up a meeting, and he just left my office. I said, okay. He said, Leland, he is going to match up to $500,000 the next 4 years for you. So he said, if you give us $50,000, he's going to match it. And he's going to match anything you do the next 5 years, including this year, up to $500,000.
And
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. Wow. Give me cold chills.
Yeah, I just got
it
myself.
It actually was a bone-chilling moment, and I thought, my gosh, he sent me the contract so I could show my people it was a legit deal. And so we've been out there hustling like crazy to raise money for pediatric cancer. It's a pretty cool deal because Saturday we are going to be recognizing a young person at the state tournament, and it's what we call a miracle child. This miracle child has been through treatments and at the Children's Hospital and actually rang the bell about 7 months ago and literally was hours from death, and they got her pulled out. So we're going to recognize that. We're going to recognize our miracle family, our miracle child, the miracle family there Saturday. I think it's halftime of the 5 o'clock game. So, it's been great. Our golf tournaments are getting bigger, and we are setting our later today. I got a conference call with Lincoln West, and we're thinking about having a golf tournament Lincoln West this year. So, that's the that's the update. And you know, if you want to get involved, you can Venmo. And this is how we do it. We ask for $20. Our strength is in our numbers. If we get 1,000 or 15,000 people to give us $20, you know, that money adds up. And then every $20 you give, you just think of it like it's $40, because our matching donor is going to give, he's going to match it. So it's been great. Okay, Officials VS Cancer is our Venmo app. And if, you know, other than that, I'm on Facebook, so you can contact me on Facebook, and like I can get you hooked up any way you want. And I'll get you a date on the golf tournament in the next couple weeks. I'll give you a holler, and we'll talk about the golf tournament.
Sounds awesome, man. There's no better way to end it than that right there. Thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on a stellar career in basketball. And hopefully we'll get a football game next year, because it's always great to have that microphone on when we can turn us down and turn you on the people know what the penalties were.
So it's great. A question, Leland. We love that about you in football, is your mic system. Us radio guys love that because we plug right into it. It sounds awesome on air. We have some wireless lapels at the basketball tournament. Can we hook one up on you?
Yeah, I don't know if you want to do that. It wouldn't be a problem at all for me, because I'm. I tell you what, they did a deal here at the 270 conference, and a lot of people come up and talk to me. They just recognize me. What's no big deal? And the guy came up to me and he says one thing I appreciate what you've done for the last 30 years. I've watched you, your professionalism. And if that's all they remember about me, then I'm good. Because I've always tried to be the ultimate professional, and took it on the court as a professional, and left it on the court as a professional. And I think that's the way we all should do it. So, just bring it down. I'll put it on.
It'll be like wired up on NFL Network. Leland, man, thanks so much. Congratulations on a wonderful career. We'll see you up there this weekend, okay? Oh, and by the way, my man Wyatt Compton, Mervin's grandson, my boy just walked in, and he wanted me to tell you hi, too. So
Very good.
Yeah.
Hi, and tell him have a good summer this year.
Will do, man. We'll see you this weekend.
Take care. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you are very welcome. That's our man, Leland Searcy. Last go-around coming up on Saturday.
Real quick, that Venmo, I know we got to take a break. I wanted to get that Venmo.
Officials VS Cancer.
Yeah, so if you have Venmo, it's at OK Officials VS Cancer.
We can probably put that on our Facebook page, huh?
No problem.
Just for people to see it.
Awesome. Okay.
All right, when we come back, wrapping it up, get you an update on that Class A girls quarterfinal. Monty Tucker says what's up, Wyatt. Also, we got to pick our champs.
That's right.
Thanks so much to Mark and Leland. It's good stuff this time of the year.
Yes.
And from two guys that have been as plugged into high school sports in the state of Oklahoma as there has been over the past however many years you want to count back. Those guys, one on the court, one doing what we do, and organizing a lot of other stuff outside of that. So really good stuff.
We need to get more hooked up with the official, you know, Officials versus Cancer. He mentioned that golf tournament.
I like to play golf.
Turns out you do, and I like to broadcast. Maybe we should go there, do our show from Lincoln.
Now we're talking. I just saw the big boss walk by.
I've been in that building. It's nice. I've been on that course, both east and west. It's nice.
Man, I've never played one of them.
Never played one of them.
Uh-huh. I couldn't tell you which.
I've played them both.
No, actually, you know what? I think last time at one of those energy deals I played one time.
It was west than that time.
See, I think we play the East the next time. I've been there twice for that.
Okay. Anyways, I think we can, and I'm saying this out loud for my own benefit. I think we can do better and help them out. I think we can be a part of this.
Absolutely. Update from the Class A girls state tournament, 34-25. Caddo has widened the gap after a 26-21 halftime lead. Actually, it looks like 34-25. Oh, there's a bunch of different halftime. Anyway, it is 34-25. Whoa.
It's the first.
I don't know.
Okay.
Not getting anything.
Well,
that's
we got
not good.
3 minutes to make our picks, then
okay,
we'll
go.
Figure it out.
All right, let's go with I've got it written down on the paper this way, so we will start. Class A girls. Go.
It's hard for me to pick against Hydro Weekly because they brought so much back. Mentioned the Berkey twins. Seeing them, they're just such a well-oiled machine. Used to being in this tournament. We talk about Fort Cobb's tenure in this tournament. The Hydro's turned into that. They just used to be in here. I just don't see them getting much of a challenge. And I think it will be Hydro versus Ceiling. I'm sticking with that. And I know early in the year I was high on Ceiling, but that loss to Garber stands out to me. But I think Ceiling recovers, gets to the finals. I think Hydro takes care of business and wins it.
Give me Ceiling.
Aha!
Give me Ceiling.
We've switched ships.
I have been on the Ceiling bandwagon ever since I watched them lose in the semifinals last year to Hydro.
You have? Well, yeah,
have
but this year you're kind of teetering on
I've
it,
I've been
though.
On that. I'm staying on that bandwagon.
Okay, all right.
Class A boys. To me, this one is the most up-in-the-air tournament of all.
It really is. You got hot teams. You got tradition-rich teams that are used to being there. It's hard to pick. Hydro Weekly, the defending champ. And then you got teams we just don't know about, like I alluded to talking to Mark, like Caddo and Tushka. Garber, I think, is good. And that's where I'll go. I'll go to Garber. I think they win it.
I do, too. And I think they get revenge from last year against Hydro Weekly. You know what I mean? Yeah. I've seen this happen before in this building where a team gets – I'm with you with Garber. Class B girls.
Class B girls. It was real eye-opening. Mark Rogers, the high school guru, picked Pittsburgh. I didn't even have them on my radar. I had teams, of course, like Hammond, La Mega, maybe even Duke. But I think La Mega and Hammond are on a collision course for the finals. I'm going to lean towards Hammond. I think they're playing their best basketball right now with their guard play and, of course, Henley West doing what she does. If they can continue that delicate combination of inside-outside play, a good balance, I think they're gonna take home the title. Give me Hammond.
Me too. Me too. Hey, if they make threes, they're going to – it's this simple.
Yeah.
If they make threes, nobody's beating them. If they don't, then somebody can. But I'll take Hammond as well. Watching them the other night against Arnett, I was super impressed with the way that they play. Class B boys.
Class B boys, Mountain View is on a tear. They haven't lost this year. You got Fort Cobb that's used to being in that building. Year in and year out, that first round matchup, they're at Washington, I beg your pardon. But they're used to being in this tournament year in, year out, so they know what kind of pressure they're dealing with. There's Duke. That's always going to be in the conversation. I'll go with Glencoe.
Seriously?
Yep. Is that where you're going?
No. Yes, but no. I couldn't decide. I've got four teams that I think could all win it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Class A boys could be wide open. Class B could – I mean, it's kind of halfway there too. There's a lot of contenders here.
Let me find the bracket. What's the bracket?
We got Mountain View, Fort Cobb, Roth, Stringtown.
They're on the same time, right? That same side, right?
Same side.
Yes,
Duke,
they are.
Duke, Buffalo, Valley.
I'm going all Southwest Oklahoma final.
You're going Duke?
Duke versus Mountain View, Goody Bow in the finals. Give me – I'm going to – me and our good buddy Mark on the text line are going to be both on the same side. I've got the Duke Tigers.
Yo, Dukies.
Over
the
Mountain
Tigers.
View Tigers. By the way, fun fact, half of the field is the Tigers.
No,
Stringtown, Roth, Duke, and Mountain View Goody Bow. All
sure
Tigers.
I'm sure Mark knew that too, but that's interesting.
Also another fun fact, all eight teams that made the area final in Class B boys are in the state tournament because their teams went 4-0 in the follow-up game after they lost. I've got a lot of fun facts for you, Class B boys.
Well, bring it. Let's
think
go.
Think about this. I think this is Fort Cobb's 28th, if I remember right, state tournament appearance. Mountain View's second. Nope, 26. 26. Look at Wyatt. He's doing some studying, too. Everybody have a great day. We got it all on ParagonTV.com as well.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered.